Welcome back to the Positive Gains Podcast. And today, my special guest is Roxanne Modafferi. Roxanne is a legend in the MMA community. She's basically seen it all, done it all, jack of all trades. So we'll talk about a lot of the different things that you've been able to do, especially living and training or teaching in Japan. But Roxanne, thanks for being on today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So yeah, your career is an interesting one.
You could say that again.
Yeah. I had read a thing, I guess a while back, that when you first got over to Japan, that you weren't sure if you were going to be able to, not be able to, but if you were going to come back. Was that because you enjoyed the lifestyle and the area so much? I mean, what was the thought process behind that?
Yes, I really love Japan. I feel like I fit in there. I love the area that I lived in. I made a lot of friends. I love training there. So I basically was thinking that I'd stay there until I got old and retired, but that didn't end up happening.
And so you were teaching English, right? To the, I guess, the locals or students, things like that, right?
Yes, I worked for Berlitz, which is a global company. And we taught a small group and also private lessons focusing on business English. For example, a Sony employee would have to go do business with Americans, so they'd need to speak English. So we had a lot of those clients in addition to their families and kids.
How long did it take you to adjust over there as far as just everything in general, with it being so completely different than the U.S.?
Well, I was really into it. I watched anime, I studied the culture, and I did an exchange year there when I was in college. So that was my adjustment period. And it was really cool. Like, I saw something unusual or different than America. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I just learned about it. So that was cool. So then when I moved to start my job, I was already used to it because my host mother and college friends showed me the ropes.
Okay. And are you fluent in Japanese?
I'm semi-fluent, so I'm pretty good. I don't know if I do like UN translating, but I can have a conversation and get around.
And so then after teaching and living in Japan, did Strikeforce come into play right after that? I mean, because you were still training, right, in between?
Yeah, I was living in Japan before and also after Strikeforce. I think that was like 2009 or 10. I remember my manager called me in the middle of the night because it was daytime in America. And he asked me if I wanted to fight for Strikeforce, the short notice fight. And I said, yes. So that was how that happened.
And were there nerves behind that? Obviously you wanted to do it, but I mean, what were the feeling? What was your feeling like leading into, to signing?
I was just so excited because I had wanted the Strikeforce contract for years. I thought, it was my next step in my challenge and my career. And I was frustrated that I wasn't getting it. So finally, when I had the opportunity, I was so happy.
And kind of going back to teaching, was teaching like your not your fallback plan, but something that you had that was maybe more stable if the fights weren't coming in? Was that always something that maybe you thought you would have something in your back pocket?
Well, back in the day, in the year 2000, people weren't making money from fighting. It was just a hobby. So, it never once crossed my mind that I could make a living off fighting. I had to go to college, get an education, get a job, and then train and fight, in my free time. So, that's how I basically viewed it until The Ultimate Fighter season 18. So until like 2013, fighting was just a hobby pretty much. And I've always wanted to be a teacher. Like, even as a kid, when they asked you, do you want to be a fireman or a policeman? I was like, I want to be a teacher. So I kind of always wanted to do that.
And that leads me into The Ultimate Fighter season 18. You're on Misha Tate's team. Can you talk about that experience? Because I know you're on two different seasons, but just the feeling, leading up to that and then actually getting on the show.
Yeah, so that was the first season with women, and I just could feel the sport evolving, instead of just being like an underground fighting thing, I could feel it turning into a sport with money and TV coverage. So like, I was really excited, and I actually started thinking maybe I could make a living if I got on it. I was just so excited. Like I quit my job in Japan. I had to make that decision. Like, am I gonna keep my safety job or am I gonna risk it all to try to fight for a living? So that was when I made that decision.
And did you have a support system behind you that supported that decision? I mean, you got thoughts kind of going back and forth. Like you said, you know, you had to make a decision. I'm just curious to know if you had people in your corner that kind of helped facilitate that decision.
Well, you know, my friends are like, go Roxy. you know, I've been a single woman. I had been a single woman for a long time. So when I moved to Vegas, my mom actually wanted to move in with me. I think she missed me because I lived overseas, right? So right. She offered to move from Massachusetts to Vegas and then we could split the rent. So that was really cool. Like I never asked her to do that. She kind of volunteered. So I guess you could say that was part of a support system, but you know, I tried to plan just in case I had to take care of myself, you know, well, I did take care of myself, but I tried not to go on vacations. I tried not to spend a lot of money. You know, I saved up my wages from teaching just in case, you know, I had to do that. And I think my life savings was like $20,000. Was it 10,000? Between like 10 and 20,000 was my life savings. So I used that to buy my plane ticket, you know, buy a car with cash. Yeah. I actually got like a little discount because the guy was like, oh, you're on the Ultimate Fighter, the car salesman. So then by the time I got back to the States, you know, I had to be very stingy, but I made it.
And life was probably a little different than where you were at. Probably getting readjusted to certain things, right?
Yeah, I was very sad to leave Japan. You know, I didn't really want to, but that was part of the deal, follow my dreams. And it did take a while to be adjusted. So many things happened. You know, I visited America once a year for Christmas and stuff, but I came back to the States. I'd lived in Japan for 8 years. I no longer knew how to use a television. All of a sudden, like it was, you know, a smart TV and connected to the internet. And I'm like, how do I use this? Like I couldn't use the TV at my dad's house because I never had one in Japan.
Wow.
I used my computer to watch stuff. So I couldn't use TVs anymore. I felt old. there's like just different foods like sushi, certain sushi with all the rainbow rolls and dragon rolls and sexy rolls. Like I'd never seen that before I moved to Japan. Uh-huh. So that was cool. I feel like sushi suddenly took off. Other stuff, like weird stuff that you wouldn't really think about. Like I saw a girl, what is it called? A trash truck. Oh my gosh. A garbage truck. A garbage truck eat a mattress. I'd never seen that before. I don't know if they always did that, but like, I remember being in Vegas and like looking out my window and this huge mattress went jump into the garbage truck. I was like, I don't know. Things like that.
It took some time. Then you go to Invicta, and then fast forward, we go to Vegas, and now you get, I don't know if you got a call or if you saw a casting call for another season of The Ultimate Fighter. You end up on Justin Gaethje's team. So how did that come about the second time around?
I was really excited again. The UFC had females at 135, but they didn't have 125. And that was the division that I fought in. I had dropped to that division. So I was feeling very stuck, like, man, I'll never get into the UFC now. Like I wouldn't be able to stand up against these huge women, these really strong women. So then when they announced 125, I was super excited. And I danced around in glee when I found out about the Tough 26 season. And I tried out and I got on.
Now, did you feel any, like, I don't want to say that you had a chip on your shoulder or that you had an advantage, but you living in Vegas, you're already familiar with it. You didn't have to travel. You didn't have to really leave home, per se. So did any of that factor into your confidence, or did you just already have it regardless?
I think it was less the fact that I lived in Vegas and more that I had experienced The Ultimate Fighter before. So I knew what to expect. I knew how hard it was going to be. I knew what to expect and I could mentally steel myself for what was coming. Also, I had healed a lot more by season 26. On season 18, my neck was hurt, my shoulders were hurt, my back was hurt, like I could barely function. By the time I got to season 26, I was feeling awesome. I had good strength and conditioning. I had good massage therapy. Like I was feeling really good and my skill level had gone up. I'd improved. So I had more confidence that, man, I'm actually a contender like against all these other women. So that was awesome.
And then we go into, you know, we go a little further, you know, the thought process behind retiring. I know I read another thing where you said towards the end, you were kind of taking some damage and you know, starting to wear on your body a little bit. So were you ready to hang it up? Because again, a lot of people will call you again, a staple in MMA, especially for women, a pioneer. So how hard was that process behind retiring?
I put off thinking about retirement until I started getting headaches in the training. And then I knew that I didn't want my brain to take any more damage. And also I felt like I wanted to go in the gym, drill, you know, practice my techniques, spar. When I sparred, I wanted to try out my new techniques. You know, I didn't want to like have a battle every day. And I feel like the people I was training with wanted to battle every day. And I'm not that young. Like maybe I could have handled that if I were 10 years younger, but I'm like, I don't want that anymore. You know? So I just felt like I was losing the race. You know, these athletes had caught up to the martial artists and I was just, yeah, starting to lose my fights and I was getting headaches. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to get brain damage. You know, I don't want to be one of those people. So,
well, when you look back at everything that you've accomplished so far, you know, living overseas, teaching, you know, the fight career, so many different things. I saw that you were at International Fight Week and the response and how people were, you know, warm and welcome and coming up to you. And you had said that you kind of couldn't believe that people had, you know, were asking you for pictures and autographs. So now when you take a step back and bring it all in, you know, how do you feel about everything you've accomplished so far?
I feel really happy and proud of myself. You know, I wish I had won more fights, but overall, like I've been hearing people like Robert Jordan, the famous psychologist, talking about how, like, it doesn't matter if you win every fight, because it's important to look at the span of playing the game. And if you're a good player and people like you, you'll be invited to play more games. So, and that is how you win the large mega game or meta game. I really like that what he said. So that made a lot of sense to me. So I got invited to play a lot of games, man. I fought in Strikeforce, Invicta, different countries like the UFC. I got to fight for the title. Who gets to fight for the title? How many people get to fight for the title? And it was a good fight. So I'm very proud of myself and pleased.
And so what new adventures do you have going on, you know, for the future? Any goals? What are you looking forward to?
I want to publish my third book. It's almost done. I would like to sell more of the first two that I published. So if you guys could check out RoxanneModafferi.net, you know, and then check out my store. I have some books for sale. I want to have a kid. I'm going to get married in October. So that's a goal. And I want to get a job. Right now I'm doing some writing. You know, I want to get better at photography. I'm teaching jiu-jitsu at Tribe Martial Arts and Fitness. So we'll see. I feel not quite settled yet, you know, in what I'm doing, but that's okay. Life is like that. So I'm trying to enjoy every day.
Well, you definitely got your hands full. So lasting advice, what advice would you give anyone?
In what regard?
Let's say, you know, person wants to be a fighter or, you know, cause you're unique, right? You're teaching. So you're able to do a multitude of different things. So maybe somebody doesn't just want to be a fighter. They want to be able to be an author, like you said, and fight and teach and, you know, coach as well. So what advice would you give to somebody? Like, where should they start?
Oh gosh, I would say just in general, I read a book about talent and strength, and the book talked about how the things that you're naturally strong at and talented at, you seem to accomplish easier and you have fun doing them. So for example, teaching and jujitsu, I love teaching and I'm good at it. And I feel like I excel at it. And then jujitsu, I feel like I learn it really quickly and I love it. But kickboxing, I'm not such a fan of kickboxing, but I have to do it. But I feel like no matter how hard I work at it, I really grow slowly. So I think that, well, the book suggested that people who really pursue their natural talent are the most successful because they can build their lives around something they're good at rather than focusing on their weakness. Like if I were going to be like a professional Muay Thai fighter, that would be really hard because I'm not good at it. Now, yes, if I work and put in the effort, I would get a little better at it, but that would be a harder life. So I guess my advice would be try to put yourself in situations where you're able to do something that you feel excited about, that you naturally excel at. And then maybe that can help you, you know, you're going to have to still work hard, but that can help you build a good pathway to your goal.
Great advice. Roxanne, I appreciate you being on today. For the viewers, we will put the link below so you guys can purchase the book. If you're interested, in check out her website. Yeah, thank you for all you've done. What is it? What's the saying? I'm not going to say it because I'm going to butcher it. But basically, you know, paying it forward. You're doing all the great things, saying all the great things. So appreciate you. And you're welcome back on anytime.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.